This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Box Trek. I am your host, Matt Brady, joined today by my partner in crime, Ezra Kirk, aka Womprat underscore 2M. As we both just finished The Witcher season 2, and I think we can both agree that not that season 1 was by any means bad, because season 1 is good, but season 2 is so much better.
Yeah,
that it like I think I said on Twitter it makes season 1 look like trash. Not that season 1 is bad, but it's just season 2 is so much of a step ahead.
Yeah, I agree with that. I 100% agree with that, man. I was hooked. I'll tell you right now, it was I started on Friday, finished it Saturday night. Really could have finished it in one night, but was sort of like, I want something to do tomorrow, you know, because it was that good. I had to tell myself, put it down. I was around episode 5 and I just said, okay, let's just save a batch for tomorrow. But man, the lighting, it was, first of all, beautiful. I understood this a little bit more. I have tons of questions for you today just because I'm a little unfamiliar with it all, but I freaking loved it. Loved it, man.
Yeah, you can tell. And I don't know. I don't know if there's anything that sort of, I'm going to look this up, The Witcher season 2 budget, because it, the whole thing felt bigger. Okay, so it says that it is, so the season, I don't know what the season 1 budget was, but everything's saying that the season 2 budget is roughly the same as what we've been getting in the Disney shows, Wheel of Time, all that stuff, which now seems to be like $10 million per episode is seeming to be this sort of industry standard. Excuse me, that we're getting for like The Mandalorian and WandaVision and Wheel of Time and all this stuff. So it seems like season 2 of The Witcher is roughly the same, because you can just tell. I mean, immediately, yeah, as you said, the lighting,
yeah,
everything just feels bigger.
Yeah, better budget.
And I also, and I also think that, to me, the best thing about season 2 is that it felt like one coherent storyline, as opposed to season 1, which jumps all around. And we'll get into that for a bit, because just where they're pulling from the books, because the books tend to do that as well. The books are kind of, the first two books, you feel like you're all over the place. You're like, what's even going on? And actually, I covered this because I did a review of the first book, which is The Last Wish, which is, it's like The Last Wish and Sword of Destiny are the first two books, and they're short stories. Because when he started writing this, he was writing it and it was getting published in this like magazine, right? You know, those old like science fiction, you know, fantasy sort of collection things, you know, as I do many podcasts together. And one of the ones we cover is Game of Thrones, kind of like how the original run of Game of Thrones, the Daenerys chapters were like published by themselves in these like fantasy sort of magazines and stuff like that. So it's kind of like that. And then it ended up getting, he ended up writing books. And then ultimately The Witcher was bought by a video game company called CD Projekt Red. And then they went on to make the games and everything. They make other games. Their most recent one is Cyberpunk 2077, which didn't necessarily kind of get flack for not being like the best game in the world after like years of buildup. But nonetheless, they make the Witcher games as well. And the Witcher 3 is, you know, considered like one of the greatest games of all time.
Yeah.
So it pulls from these two books. And then the third season, or excuse me, the second season pulls from the first sort of novel. So if you go and you type in The Witcher book one, it'll tell you Blood of Elves, which is sort of the first novel.
Yeah.
So I went into it and I'm just trying to get into The Witcher, right? Because I was like, I want to play the games. I know everyone's telling me all about like the third game's the greatest game ever. The show's coming out. And I didn't watch Witcher last year or whenever season one came out. I didn't watch it because I was waiting. Because I wanted to like play the games and get into it and do the whole thing. So then when season two was announced, I was like, all right, I'm gonna read the book. So I just, without any sort of knowledge, go to Amazon. I type in Witcher book one and the Blood of Elves comes up. And I'm like reading it and I'm like a quarter of the way through this book. And I'm like, I feel like I'm missing a lot of context.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
And so then you go back and you're like, okay, well, Blood of Elves is technically like the first book, but The Last Wish and sort of Destiny, which were these short stories, were sort of published later as like a bigger sort of collection.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And once you start reading those, then it's like, okay, it all makes much more sense, which is also how I feel the seasons have gone. Because season two, you get in, you know the characters, and it's a much more straightforward line as opposed to jumping all around, and it all feels so much more coherent and so much better.
Yeah, that's my biggest thing too, was I was a little bit, as I went on, I started to understand the world and some of the politics and the factions, which hopefully we'll talk a little bit about, because I was confused. In season one, I was confused, and I was like, who the hell is this person and this person? And then we're jumping all over, and then at the end, it threads the needle. And you're like, okay, I kind of get it. But then in this season, I really understood the connection between Geralt and Yen. And I got their relationship. And then what Ciri is to them and to the world. And I got the spheres colliding, demons, monsters. I was like, wow, okay. It made a lot more sense in season two. And I think that maybe that was some of the feedback they got for season one. And also you're saying some of the story is like that. Some of the where you're going to pull from the source material is, you know, short stories, and you got to kind of build it in your mind to play all of it or do all of it, read all of it, you know?
So, yeah, exactly. And the blending. So they blend it all together too, which is sort of interesting. So like the first episode of season two is A Grain of Truth, which is actually my favorite story of that one is actually in The Last Wish, I believe. A Grain of Truth is in The Last Wish. But season one also pulled from the second book and you know, stuff like that. So the last, all of the first sort of set of original stories are that you'll find in the first two books are sort of like these weird, you know, sort of takes on classic sort of fables, you know, fairy tales, stuff like that. So in episode one, A Grain of Truth, Geralt and Ciri, you know, I forget the guy's name. I'm blanking on it right off the top of my head, but it's played actually by Tormund Giantsbane from Game of Thrones.
Oh, that guy, Nivelin or whatever. I got the
Nivelin. Yeah, exactly.
The guy, the beast guy. Okay.
Yeah, and he's in a house and he can sort of like summon food and stuff like that. So
cool.
It's a play on Beauty and the Beast. What it is, and you see that in season one. Some of the stories are these sort of takes on, you know, mythology, sort of like fairy tales.
Yeah. Yeah.
And stuff like that. And so I think season one doing what it did with sort of introducing it. I definitely agree with you. The jumping around is like, what's like going on here? The first book is like that. So you have the first book, which is The Last Wish. It's sort of this tale. It starts off with this chapter and it's called like a Voice of Reason. And Geralt's like fighting this monster. He gets injured. And then like, as he's sort of laying there injured, he's like reflecting back on all these different stories. And so it keeps like bouncing back and forth of him reflecting on all of these sort of stories mm-hmm. that he's going into. And then we see that in the season. And so like the one that sort of makes him who he is and sort of the most where he sort of gains some fame is where he fights the Striga, which mm-hmm. is, it's like episode 4, I think, in season 1. It's where he fights the monster in the crypt and he takes the guy, he takes him up and sort of uses him as bait, and then he like sleeps inside the casket so that way the girl can get the curse lifted or whatever. And then she like takes it, then she bites him and stuff like that, and then you realize it's actually like the king's daughter and, you know, all of this stuff. So that's kind of like Geralt's origin. Like that's actually the first Witcher story in the whole deal. Is that's his, that's like the original story.
Okay.
And so it's pulling from all of those. And then the most important one, which we'll dive into season 2, and that sets really kind of his whole story up, is one is the story The Last Wish, which you do see in season 1, and that's where they're fighting against the djinn, the mm-hmm. genie.
Yeah.
Essentially, and he uses the last wish to basically be with Yennefer, as he wants to be with Yennefer. So that is like his sort of dynamic going forward with her, is that whether she likes it or not, they're bound together, right? Essentially by destiny, because of this wish.
Destiny, yeah.
That Geralt has. And then the other one is the child surprise, which is Ciri, who isn't really in the first book. She's in the second one, and then the third one is where it really starts to build up. And she's the game changer of the whole thing, because that's, to me, what makes season 2 so much better, is her. It's like really the focus is on her.
So let me ask you a question. So like in season 1, is that why they kept her story a bit more separated from like Yen and Geralt doing their thing? Because he does get to that point where he and the bards split up, and Yennefer was trying to get a child, right? Wasn't she trying to get a child? That's her big thing, right?
Yeah, because when she cures like her humpback, right?
Yeah.
And in the process, she loses the ability to have children.
Okay.
And so what it ends up creating is this huge dynamic where Geralt, right, wants Yennefer.
Mm-hmm.
Yennefer knows she's bound to Geralt, but doesn't necessarily want to be with him.
Mm.
She wants to have a child, but she can't.
And then he
has a child surprise, who for a long time he doesn't want to have anything to do with, because he's a Witcher and he feels like, you know, it would be dangerous for her and all of this stuff. And so that's kind of like, in a way, it's kind of a triangle, but it's not really, you know, like, but it's really what makes the whole thing so interesting, is that dynamic between them.
But in the show, she does have some attraction for Geralt, right? And she is somewhat.
She does. They're always on again, off again.
Yeah. Yeah. Over the years, I get it. Okay,
right, right, and then you have the other character, Triss Marigold.
Yeah, who? Now how does she? She's friends with Geralt, right?
Well, she's kind of more than friends with Geralt. She wants to be with Geralt.
Also, she loves it, but like
she loves
Jesus.
Geralt.
Come on.
So then in the games, especially like The Witcher 3, you can choose who to go with. At sort of the end, you can choose to go with Yennefer, choose to go with there's a lot, you get all these different choices, and, you know, impacts the ending of the game. Right. And there definitely was, and even still is, like on the Witcher subreddit and stuff like that. But everyone always feels like, and if you just look at Geralt's monologues and dialogue and stuff like that, Yennefer is ultimately who he would choose, but a lot of people choose Triss because they like her, you know,
because she likes him back, kind of, you know, like that's the
right.
Because what he says to Triss in this episode is like he can't give her what she wants, and it's because I'm guessing because he has truer, like more pure feelings for Yennefer.
For Yennefer.
Yeah, and I kind of get that. Okay, let me ask another question just while we're kind of bouncing around here.
Yeah.
I put up on the wiki some stuff because I didn't understand this world until I started seeing them colliding spheres together. And
right.
You know, when she breaks the monolith and it falls like that, and the convert, what is it called? The convergence or whatever.
Right.
I didn't understand any of this really. So I'm just going to read this. This is from the Witcher wiki, which is, the, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's, you know, it says it.
Yeah.
No, that's pretty information from everything.
It's definitely pretty. And again, real quick, just before we dive into this,
yeah,
I haven't really played the games. I'm in like the Witcher subreddit, and I'm like, yeah. I actually just downloaded the second one today. I tried playing the first one, but it's like so ancient and uses like the combat.
Oh, really?
Like really weird. I got like 10 minutes in, and I was like, because I'm using like keyboard mouse, and I was like, I'm just going to the second one because the second one came out on Xbox 360.
Okay.
And then the third one came out on like PlayStation 4. Era.
Okay.
So
okay.
You know, yeah. So,
gotcha. Yeah, just okay. And I'm a total newbie to this. I literally, what this show, this Matt and I, we do a bunch of other projects and stuff. So my thing is often when a book series or whatever is adapted to TV or a show, I'm always right. like, hopefully new people will come in and go read that source material. I am now that new person who is like, I want to actually go look all this stuff up. So last night I'm like, as I'm watching, I'm like, what the heck is up with these worlds? And so it says that it takes place on some unnamed planet, which is referred to by the people as the world, the Earth or the globe. And 90% of the land is on the northern hemisphere. So when I read that, I was like, oh, that makes sense as to why the north is such a big deal. And the south wanting to, like, they don't have much, but yet the north has a lot to lose. Kind of,
right.
And they've got these alliances, and I was like, what? Okay, it made more sense when they seem to be, because I thought, okay, maybe it's just they're equal halves. I thought they were, it was like the north half and the south were equal, but it seems like the north is much more has much more land, and they could lose it or whatever. But the the globe orbits a star referred to by its inhabitants as the sun. It has one moon, unlike on Earth, each month begins at the new moon, and the full moon can last a couple of nights. Okay, all that good stuff, right? Let's see. The southern hemisphere. Let me get to the hemispheres here. The southern hemisphere is mainly covered by a vast ocean. During the northern hemisphere's winter, the hot air masses from the southern hemispheres flow along the sea currents to the north, where they freeze and there's snowfall. There's a bunch of that going on. Okay, so that's kind of cool. Northern hemisphere. Here we go. The northern hemisphere has much more land than the southern one. The most known is called the continent, and it comprises of northern and eastern lands, Nilfgaardian Empire, and the far north. So I guess that's the thing. So really the southern hemisphere is not much of anything. It's more just that the north has a far north part to it, I guess, mm-hmm. as well. So anyways, just kind of interesting to see all the different kingdoms and stuff. And I tried to pull up even a map to look at some of this because it's fascinating. I'm trying to figure out which, like, the elves seem to be roaming around. You've got some, they're spread out or whatever, and they're being persecuted. And right. What's the kingdom that takes them in, right? Nilfgaard or whatever. Yeah, and that works out fine until the bunch of babies are killed in this. My good God. I was like, what the heck? That was awful. I was like, this is bad. This is really, really bad. And I mean, in terms of terrifying, I mean, this is what The Witcher is. It's monsters and
right.
Crazy, creepy, evil things. But yeah, the elves.
Yeah, you've definitely got a few different factions going. And it's so interesting because and again, I'm like halfway through the third book because once I finished the second one, I was like, OK, I can go into the third one, which this pulls from. So I think some of the ending of book three was spoiled a little bit for me from the show, which is fine because I'm just sort of diving into this from literally all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I think you and I both did you watch the Hour of the Wolf, the anime special?
Yes.
Yeah. Which is cool. And then you get Vesemir's sort of backstory. Story.
Yeah.
Which is sweet. And he's like, again, another addition to season two, which just makes it so much
cooler. Like this Academy of Witchers and
right. And that's ultimately kind of the thing is that you have like the dynamics of this world. And I actually would encourage you as to even do the audiobooks.
Yeah.
I know you and I are both obviously big audiobook people, but mm-hmm. they're pretty short, like they're 10 hours. And because they're, at least for the first two, because they're split up into little short stories, you can really plow through like one chapter and you've gotten like a story. And so you feel like, okay, I can like definitely set it down here. If you want. They're easy reads, they're short reads, and they're definitely super cool. But the cool thing about the way the politics works is you have a lot of different factions, but our story is still always centered through Geralt, who interacts with the world in a very sort of particular way. And I think season one did a really good job of kind of showing who he is, whereas season two, they are like expanding, we're getting bigger, we're dealing with more factions, but you get it through this eyes of a Witcher, who ultimately is this person. And they dive into it a little bit about like their feelings this season, like the fact that they do still kind of have feelings and all of that. Is that you have this character Geralt, who is a Witcher, who the world views as basically in its own way kind of a monster, right? He goes and he hunts monsters and all of these things, and people kind of view him as a mutant and a freak and don't necessarily want him around. But then when he does show up to take care of their monsters, they're a little bit, they might like begin to change their tune on him, or whatever. And he's always like very brooding, right? He's a very sort of brooding character. But then this season we get to see him sort of become this father figure to Ciri. And so, you know, like the hard exterior is beginning to shake a little bit. And he has to like kill his friend right at the beginning of the season, and so it's just really interesting to get that dynamic while all of this other politicking and other stuff is going on. And the story though is still focused through the eyes of a Witcher, not necessarily, you know, like when we watch Game of Thrones and Wheel of Time and all these other things where it's like the politics are so important and everything, and it's like the main focus is like sort of through that. Whereas this is like all that other stuff's going on, and Geralt kind of has to live inside of this world as opposed to like be the one leading the charge to change it.
Yeah, I get that. Okay, yeah, because all these other powers and politics are bigger than him, really. He's just a Witcher. The crazy thing is that like, and I just read some stuff about like that, the Wild Hunt or whatever.
Right.
And all these other greater powers and destiny, really, even though he's just, because he feels like, to me, when I think of a Game of Thrones or whatever, I think of like a hedge knight who's on call to come deal with something. And, you know, it's, they have a different type of reputation, but it could be that the kingdoms need this air quote hedge knight or Witcher. In the end, he gets kind of, because of the, whatever, the law of the surprise request, Yennefer, different things kind of thrust him into bigger moments, and he becomes bigger to, I guess, this world. So,
and destiny is a huge part of it. And that the second book is actually called The Sword of Destiny, and they reference it in the first. And the general idea is that that's why they call it the Sword of Destiny, is that it has two sides to the sword, right?
Okay.
So there's like a good and a bad that kind of go along with
it. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Boy. Okay.
Yeah, that's, it's really cool. Deep. And Andre Sapkowski, the author, I mean, this guy really, to be fair, I think the more I dive, it's one of these things where it's like, if you take a first step into the world, you're like, okay, this is kind of cool. And you take another step, and you take another step, and it just gets like, as you go along, it truly just gets better and better and better. And it's just so interesting with this author, you know, who wrote all of these stories and everything. Because we read Wheel of Time, where it's like, you know, we're like, okay, this is great, and then there's like a slog, and like, all right, we got to get through a lot of this weird stuff. And then we read Game of Thrones, which is like freaking amazing and so deep, but where's the ending, you know?
Right.
And
it's
so, you know, you criticize that, where it's like, man, I have like no criticisms of this author. It's like every step I take, I'm just like more and more like, wow, this is just, it just gets better and better and deeper every step.
So let me ask you a question. Were the games originally, were they first, or they came after the story?
They came after.
Okay.
They came after.
So they adapted.
Yeah. So he
got it.
They actually take place after the books.
Okay.
But I guess like in the term of like real sort of canon, it's not necessarily
Get it.
Connected, although people kind of view them and say they are, and
all of
these different things. But the games actually were by far in terms of popularity bigger than the books. Not even close.
They brought a lot of attention to the books
because they didn't even gain like main, because they came out in like the 90s and like into the early 2000s, I think. The first books I know were written in the early 90s. But then like the first Witcher game, I think it was around like 2004, I want to say. 2000, and then really like the second game, which was Xbox 360 era. So that was probably, I want to say, The Witcher 2 Assassins of Kings, which I just downloaded actually, 2011. And then like the game that really, I think, pushed this to being like such a big deal was The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, which won tons and tons of awards. I mean, it was insane how many awards that game won, and it's still considered like one of the best games ever. And it's 2015 was when it came out, and it won tons. I mean, it made CD Projekt Red, I would say, like where we now consider them to be like one of the biggest video game publishers, and people play a lot of attention to what it is. And that's why they had this game Cyberpunk 2077, which came out and it was really buggy and all the stuff, and everyone was actually really sort of shocked at how bad it was comparatively, because The Witcher 3 is such an amazing game. Our mutual friend Jimmy is like, it's literally one of the top three games I've ever played in my life. I mean, it is like a top 10 ever.
Gotcha. Okay. So now is the book series, I just looked up the in order, is it completed? Is it finished, or is he still, because it has,
he hasn't
2013.
Yeah. Yeah. There haven't been any. There haven't been any. Yeah. And originally he's Polish. That's what it is. Yeah. He's Polish. So you look at when these came out. So you're talking 90 to 2013.
Right.
And then a lot of these weren't even translated into English until like 2015, 2007. 2007 was the first translated, which was The Last Wish. So that's even more odd, because it's like, that's the, you know, it's like The Last Wish comes out, it's not Blood of Elves. And so it's just kind of, and then they did Blood of Elves, so they didn't do Sword of Destiny, which is that second sort of thing. It's, to trust me, I did a YouTube video on it. It's a mess. Like, it's trying to navigate your way through. It's an absolute mess, because then Season of Storms, which is the most recent book, actually like takes place after like a few chapters of
the first.
And it's like,
I just read that. Yeah. Okay.
It's so confusing. It's such a mess.
I see. I mean, it's cool. I love that. I see a series here that looks like maybe I can dive into, because I do want to understand more about the world and get like, because like, okay, during this season, just to get back to season two, the witch in the hut, I had no, right. I was like, hold on a second. You've got,
who is this? What's going on?
Yeah. Who the heck is? So that was one thing that was a little confusing to me, but the show is so good that it just says, hey, stay with us. Like, that information is coming later. And I just had to trust that. Okay. I'm going to figure out eventually who that is. And then you realize it's some demon that's just trying to get out, and that the first warlocks and witches like trapped this demon there. And then the monoliths are holding creatures back and stuff. It's like, what the heck?
Exactly. And I think this season two is, so like, I'm honestly ready, and I mean this in all seriousness, I would stack this season against like season four of Game of Thrones, because I actually watched it in a way kind of twice, to be honest, I watched it. I started watching it Friday, and then with, you know, Teresa, my fiance, we were like, she was like, she did not like season one at all.
Okay.
She didn't like season one. She's like, it's just not for me. Plus, season one, it kind of did the Game of Thrones thing where it's like, all right, we're going to have like, you know, they have like the really awkward sex scene where it's like, Yennefer,
I know,
there's like all these people are watching, and it's like,
I know.
Yeah. Like Game of Thrones did the same thing. Once it got bigger, they're like, get that crap out of here. Like, I mean, there still was later, but they're like, they scaled it way back.
Yeah, the little bit where the Witchers come in, they've got girls showing up there, and it's sort of like, wait, what's going, you know, that's a little spicy, which is fine, and then they move right on. It's nothing.
But compared crazy. To season one, it's like not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. No. So, but the reason I say that I think it's so good is, for starters, obviously, the pacing is way better. It's a more straightforward plot. I actually thought when they brought back Yaskier, who is the bard, right?
Yeah.
In the books, so this is where it's kind of interesting. In the books and the game, obviously, his name is Dandelion.
Okay.
That's his name, but it's actual sort of translation. It's translated from the word like Yaskier.
Okay.
So in the games and stuff, his name is Dandelion.
But they just I got it.
But so they actually stuck with the name Yaskier, which I think works better. It's kind of like
to us, we feel like that's a name, you know.
Right. So what's odd is in the first audiobook, the narrator refers to him as Dandelion, which is, I was like, oh, that's another, but it's just the way it's like, it's translated, and it's like really weird. And, you know,
Dandelion's cool. I like that.
Dandelion. I know. I like it too. And then I get to the next one, they're calling him Dandelion. And then I watch the show and it's Yaskier. And I was like,
what's going on here?
But I think when they brought him in, which was like the end of episode 4 and like the beginning of episode 5, was like the perfect place to do it, because like the first few episodes have been like cool, mysterious, get us going, and then it starts to get like a little more dark, and you're like, and then you mm-hmm. bring in that comedic relief like right in the middle, which is that sort of like episode 5, because that's who he is, right? He's the bard. Yeah. He's going to be funny, you know. You bring him in to lighten it up just before we dive right back down into like really dark, really serious, people dying. And so I was like, that was a genius way to do that.
Right. Yep. Yeah, agreed. He was cool. You know, here's a couple other characters. Like, so the sorcerers, I've really tried to figure out like the brotherhood and your warlocks and your witches or whatever, and their dynamics. It's been a little, what's the guy in season one? Stragabor.
Yeah.
So
who's actually going to be great. He voices Grand Admiral Thrawn and is likely to play Grand Admiral Thrawn.
That's freaking awesome. Because the actress, he's sick, you know?
Right.
But in this, he shows up and he's doing stuff he's not supposed to do, invading the mind, all these different things. And I'm just not so sure, because he's there from the beginning. I'm like, is he like a big bad guy? And I just don't know. I mean, they go back and forth between, they're doing a really good job of people like me keeping us sort of guessing. Yeah. Because
they're essentially all advisors.
Yeah.
Right.
To kings and queens, and these
political figures. And I think they do a good job of, especially this season when Yennefer has lost her power.
Yeah.
And she obviously can't use it. And so she's talking about things that she's learned from them. And, you know, the most important thing is actually to get these political figures to believe, has nothing to do with magic itself. The most important thing is just to get these political figures to listen to them. And that's where their real influence is.
Right. Okay. Got it. Because the one guy has a spy, and he's like, he's got the little owl that shows up, and then she turns into a freaking sorcerer or a witch or whatever at the end. That was, I kind of thought, oh, there's something going on. I just assumed he could maybe talk to this owl or whatever. Right. And then boom, she shows up, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool.
And that guy, by the way, is in House of the Dragon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was in The Hobbit. He's in Outlander. Yeah, I forget his name, but he's a great actor.
Graham McTavish, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. So it's cool. Just cool to see him.
Yeah.
In there. Yeah. There's a lot of different political figures. There's a lot of moving pieces that go along sort of very well with this. And then now we're going to be, as we go into season 3, we're going to be on the run because Geralt and Ciri have to keep moving.
Well, hold on. Yeah, you're right. So they're on the move. They're doing their thing. It seems like now Yennefer is kind of, she's good. She tried to take her though. That was bad. And then Geralt's like, you know, keeping an eye on her, but he still loves Yennefer. And this guy, what's this guy's name here? He is, Istred. Istred, he's like the young sorcerer who like fell in love with Yennefer before she met Geralt or whatever. And they show up and they both are like in the little valley having their like, you love her, I love her,
He calls her Yenny. He's like, Yen.
Yeah. that was kind of cool to see them. And then portaling was cool. I don't know. Did they do a lot of portaling in the first
season?
Because that made one. I was like, okay, this opens up everything. Now I get how you can travel around and do stuff with mages. And that was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's they're doing a good job of, and again, I haven't gotten super deep enough into the books yet to sort of get a lot of the bigger sort of politics, because the first two books are just very, very focused on Geralt and all these tiny little, you know, hunts he's going on and all these tiny little missions, I guess, if you want to, you know, if you want to call it. Like, the second book opens up a bit more and you start to get some more of these sort of politics. Yeah, go ahead.
So as you're talking about the politics, and I'm just looking through some of the characters, I pulled up one because I had all these questions, you know. Fringilla, I think it's this. Mm-hmm. Fringilla is the sorceress who's with the Nilfgaardian army. Right. And the whole time we're sitting there, so when Ciri is watching her mother dissolve, I noticed her father wasn't dissolving in that whole image or whatever. And I kept wondering, like, who is that? Like, how did Geralt, how did they not know? How does he not have his...
How does nobody know that he's still alive?
Right. And that kind of stuff. And then, boom, there he is. And he's this crazy... He knows both of those two lied to him because he's the one who killed the elven child. And I was like, oh, mind blown. Like, that's actually awesome. And now I see where all the drama is, because they kind of have their own little family here. And you can see in that vision with the demon witch, she wanted to belong. Why did no one tell her about her family? She's very frustrated with her grandmother and everything, and then to find out he's still out there, but yet she's becoming this mini little witcher and training with Yen.
Ciri's like the most powerful person, essentially. Yeah. You know, she's got elder blood, you know, and she's gonna be a witcher. It's like, it's insane. That's pretty cool. Yeah, and then her dad obviously was the person, you know, in season one, he looks like a porcupine, right?
Yeah.
And then Geralt Law surprises him, and so then he gets Ciri.
Wow. So, but like, okay, the Law of Surprise, so he doesn't know that or that she's with child, or that something like that, or whenever she is with child, then he I got it.
So the Law of Surprise is essentially, if you enact Law of Surprise, so somebody says, I'll give you something, right, you help somebody out, Law of Surprise,
right,
is whatever the first thing is that comes along that is a surprise to you, you have to give it to whoever enacted Law of Surprise.
Wow.
So that's the whole deal, is this guy like helped save Ciri's grandfather, right? And he's going to go claim his what was bestowed to him, which would be Ciri's mother. And then oh God, now I'm blanking on her. What's the grandmother's name?
Oh God, the queen. I can't remember her name, but she's the warrior queen. Yeah.
Right. So that's why she's like so upset when Geralt enacts Law of Surprise, because now find out Ciri's mom's pregnant, and so now Ciri is his. And that's why she does not want Geralt to take Ciri, because she's trying to protect her. Because she also knows that her
Calinthe? Queen Calinthe.
Yeah. Yep, Calinthe. Yeah. Yep.
She's the grandmother of Ciri, dies during the slaughter of Sentra. Yeah. Wow.
She's also in Game of Thrones, by the way.
Is she?
She plays Maggie the Frog in like the one episode.
Oh, really? I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of Game of Thrones pullover.
That's cool.
And actors. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was pretty neat to see the reveal there and to make all the connection. So, like, is one of her parents Ciri? Like, does elder blood mean like elvish blood, or like original blood or something? Like, because that was the thing when the flowers were blooming,
which is her blood has the ability to make more witchers, because in you see in Nightmare of the Wolf, the animated episode, the attack on Kaer Morhen, they lose a lot of they lose so many supplies and everything, they lose the ability to make new Witchers. So Geralt is like one of the last made Witchers.
I see.
And Geralt in that you see Geralt's a very young boy, he's like 5 or so, when Vesemir sort of saves the day, and then Vesemir takes him under his wing.
Okay, got it. Wow. Yeah, it's a special gene. Okay, I'm just reading up about it a little bit. Wow, that is,
because yeah, there is there's alchemy and chemistry and a lot of stuff that goes on.
Well, when Yennefer did her whole thing, she's like, I'm gonna do what witchers do best and make a potion. I was like, that right. Sounds awesome, and maybe from the game and something that, like, because they always drink their little vials, and it's a very video game thing, which is like your healing potion or your witcher potion, and then bam, off you're rolling into battle,
right?
So it's cool that she did that.
You take your little elixir and it heightens your senses and all of that stuff. And the witchers can do magic too. I mean, they sort of little shields,
and
whatnot.
Yeah, that was cool. Also, I know you mentioned it just earlier, but the whole training camp, the whole Witcher compound in Vesemir,
Kaer Morhen, yeah.
Yeah, that was, for me, the coolest part of the whole thing, because it was like, because in the first one, like you said, we're bouncing all over the place. It was so cool to come back there, watch her train, get to know people, slow it down a little bit, and really understand what it meant to have more Witchers, and that Vesemir was really, to watch each one of them die, was one less Witcher in the world. And it was so heart-wrenching for him.
It's such a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, because it's so... Because especially if you watch... If you watch the Nightmare of the Wolf, you'll see just how... Like, most people don't even make it.
Right.
They die in the process. And so now they haven't been able to make a new Witcher in an incredibly long time. So... Yeah, it's a big deal to even sort of make one.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, because I felt the heaviness of that every time a Witcher died. It seemed difficult, and then Ciri wanted to become one. I don't know if she does become one later or not, but I'm intrigued to find out. Like, I know she's training like they are, and then the one guy gets a vial of her blood, and that turns out to be a big deal. He's like hunting them down. So. Yeah, she just seems to be at the center of everything, and everyone wants access to her. And so now I kind of get the idea that Yennefer and Geralt will be united in trying to protect and take care of her.
The teaser trailer was dropped at the credits. Let me pull this up.
I heard about this.
Yeah, so there's going to be I knew that this was coming. Yeah, The Witcher Blood Origin is a prequel miniseries that's coming out on Netflix. Netflix is all in on The Witcher, clearly, right? They did an animated thing, they're doing this.
Yeah.
It's coming out, and so there's no official release date for it yet, but it was announced, and it's gonna be a 6-part miniseries, and then we don't know exactly when it's coming out. It's already done filming, went into it's in post-production now.
Wow, that's really cool. So they're really like making like a universe,
absolutely. It's gonna be set 1200 years before the events of the series. Blood Origin will depict the creation of the first Witcher, as well as the events leading to the conjunction of the spheres.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. That's let's do a live little reaction.
Okay.
Let
me see if you can hear it though. Let me switch over here. So I have the screen there, but
yeah, go right ahead.
Let's see if it'll actually play. Tell me if you can hear it or not.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to worry about nothing. We got the fire burning one hell of a song, and we gonna let it burn, 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 burn. We gonna let it burn, 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 burn. Gonna let it burn, 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 burn. We gonna let it burn.
I'm down.
Wow.
there's one of the, there's one of those stones.
Okay.
Yeah, Blood Origin. Yeah, I remember this being announced.
Wow.
And there's no release date except.
Yeah, I can let it.
No.
Yeah, no.
So yeah, I'm sure it'll be 2020, 2022, maybe like next year or whatever. But yeah, it's crazy just how deep they're going to be going into going into all of this stuff, because it is, I think it's an underrated fantasy series.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, so far I'm highly intrigued, and like what I saw there was just more elves and understanding some of the origins, and like it's saying, because I, when they showed, you know, the little animation of the colliding of spheres, and he started to understand the convergence, and like I didn't quite understand the monoliths and things like that. Those are still big question marks. They say it. I mean, I know they say it, and it's like, right, you almost need to rewatch it, and it happens so quick that you're just expected to kind of pick up on it. So it's nice that they're going to go back and explain some of this and get more people who want more information. And we do. Everyone wants more. Like The Witcher is fantastic, and we're loving it. It's yeah. So this is great.
Yeah, I think their casting too has been just absolutely like on point, because everyone looks like everyone. The only person who doesn't really look like her video game counterpart, I would say, is Triss. But I think,
and I love Triss.
I think she's fine. She's really the only one that doesn't really sort of look like their counterpart. Because I remember, let me pull up the first image I remember of Henry Cavill in suit looked like awful, to be entirely honest, because he had this, he had, his hair was like, it was longer and it was like completely straight. He almost looked like Lucius Malfoy.
That's not good. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me get this. Let me get this pulled up here.
Cause I thought, you know, he looks really,
So in this first, this was the first image ever. And everyone was like, oh God, everyone was just showing like Lucius Malfoy sort of pictures. Then of course they ended up going with and I think obviously now he totally looks the part. His armor is like exactly the way it should look. And they went with the wig is much more obviously rough and like stringy, and like it looks, and that's one other thing I think that looks good here is, you know, so often in television it's like our characters will get like beat up and, you know, broken and whatever, but you can still see, like, you can still tell they're wearing makeup, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's no way this person's hair would be like flawless and all this stuff, but I feel like his always looks almost the way it should, where it's like sometimes it's even in his eyes, and stuff like that. And so I think they've done a very good job. And Henry Cavill there's like all these rumors that are coming out right now that he's like correcting people on set, because he's like, actually in the books, like, this isn't what happened.
Because
Henry Cavill's a super nerd, right? He's like on talk shows talking about Warhammer, which is like, you know, it's kind of like Dungeons and Dragons where you have little miniatures and stuff like that. And he's like hardcore into it.
Dude,
which
that
is
makes
so him... funny, because he does not seem like the kind of person.
Right.
He's
right.
Like this jacked, like gorgeous. He's Superman. You know what I mean?
I know. Yeah.
Here he is playing like Warhammer.
Well, yeah, a lot of times you get your actors who are like, they've never heard of the series, or they don't know, they don't play video games, or they're not, you know, into reading the books, and it's probably, they got a lot going on or whatever, but like, that's not their passion. Their passion, their hobby might be they're just going and watching sporting events or whatever. So really cool that he's into that.
Yeah. That the Siri, her, and she's a young actress. I think her name's like Freya something. And this is like the only thing she's ever been in.
Yeah, she's like 20 years old, and
she's gonna be a star.
Yeah, she's killing it. She's actually doing a great. Her acting is fantastic.
It's great.
It's great. Fantastic.
Yeah. Let me pull up.
For sure. Like, she was scary, and I wanted to protect her. You know, I was like, what the heck?
Yeah. So Triss is the only one who kind of looks a little different. But I think also her costuming in season two, I think with her hair not, her hair is a little bit shorter in season one. And so I think it being a little bit longer, I think it works better.
So she did have red hair in this season, like a bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And season one, it was a little more brown.
Yeah.
And so they definitely changed it. But I mean, I think she's great. I think she does a good job at playing, that character. Yennefer's like looks just about spot on.
Right. See, now I need to go back.
And Vesemir is like, I'll pull
oh,
him up.
Oh yeah.
I'll pull up next. He is like the casting for him is perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yennefer is awesome. There he is. Vesemir. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he is a perfect casting for this. So yeah, as I would encourage you, I know you're not, the games are like ridiculously long,
right?
But I do think that you would like the audiobooks. I know you and I, obviously we read Wheel of Time and Game of Thrones, all this stuff, so
yeah,
we dive into a lot of
different fandoms
books.
Yeah,
but I will say that especially the advantage of the first two books is that they're short stories, so you can kind of just listen to like one story and then you can put it down for a while and you feel like you can come back to it later.
Okay, so they are shorter a little bit.
Way shorter.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's because you can just read them as a short story.
Okay.
You can just listen to like the Witcher chapter, which is like the first one where he hunts the Strigga, which is what we see in season one. Like you can just like get through that story, then put the book down for a couple of days. It's not like Blood of the Elves is like one long book where you're like, okay, I feel like I need to continue this whole thing.
Right. Right. To get it. Yeah. A start and a finish. I like that. Cause I have like an hour commute. And so that's why I listen to podcasts and audiobooks. So yeah, this is next up on the list here.
Yeah.
I'm in. I'm locked in. I love the characters. Love the casting. It blew me away. I binged it. I haven't binged a good show like this in a while.
It's been a while.
So I was really happy just to kind of. I was up there in my bed, just walking around. It's so funny. You go to the bathroom with the phone in your hand. You come down. You get food with the phone in your hand. You go up. It's just great. So, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, the games, real quick, for people who obviously are interested.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously there's the first three games, which is The Witcher, which came out on Windows and Mac, the original. I will say, I tried to dive into it like a few months ago. It feels a little dated. Not gonna lie.
Yeah.
it feels a little dated, but the cutscenes and everything are freaking amazing. Like super, super cool.
Right.
To do that, the second one is on Xbox 360 and you get it on PC. They're all on Steam, by the way. Then the third one is on everything, Xbox One, PlayStation 4. I'm sure at some point here in the near future they'll be doing a Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5 update. The crazy thing about it is that the third game was even ported to Nintendo Switch, so you can play it on the Switch.
Okay,
now does it look great? No.
Okay.
But the fact that it runs on the Nintendo Switch is like an absolutely insane. Like the fact that it runs on the Switch and actually runs as well as it does is completely mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Because this game today, like even on the most powerful of computers, I mean, it's a resource hog. I mean, you can upscale this to 4K and it looks freaking gorgeous.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, then there's Thronebreaker, The Witcher Tales, which is like on everything. It's sort of like it's like this card-based RPG game. And then there's Gwent, which is actually surprising that there hasn't been Gwent in the show yet, which is this card game they play.
Okay.
And you get to play it in like the third game or whatever. And it got so popular that they just made an online version. It's like a free game. And it's just a card game that you play, they play in the show. It got so popular that everyone's like, we would just want to play Gwent.
That's cool. Okay. That's pretty cool. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me just pull up here just real quick. The Witcher for Witcher. Yeah. Boom. Just so I can give as a rough idea of just how amazing this game looks. So here it is.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is in like sort of 4K with ray tracing on. I mean, it's
wow.
Yeah, it's absolutely just a gorgeous game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's one of the other things is why people fell in love with it. And I did like this season. I can't remember if they did it in season one as much. But like one of the big deals is that Geralt has two swords, right? Okay. That's like the whole deal. One is steel for humans and the other is silver, which he uses against monsters. And he was using, like, we did see him with his silver sword a bit this season, which was cool.
Huh. Yeah, that's I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, so that's sort of
he's decked out, man. He's walking around. That's the thing. We need to start walking around with swords and crossbows on our back just for gains. I mean, look at this guy.
Jeez. Yeah, it's sweet. And then he did lose his horse. That was a little sad.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So all of his horses, by the way, are named Roach. He just names any horse he gets Roach.
Roach. Okay.
Right. And so that's definitely like a steery.
That was sad.
Sort of shtick. Yeah. It was like Artek all over again.
Yeah. Pour one out for Roach. God.
Yeah. So awesome. All right, Ez. Well, hey, thanks for coming on, man. Thanks for talking The Witcher. I love season two. I think you did as well.
Absolutely.
Maybe Ez will dive into the books a little bit. Maybe I'll dive. I actually just downloaded the second game. I'm going to dive into it here sort of over the Christmas little break here. So dive into that. So as always, Ez, where can people find you on the internet?
So you could just search my handle at WompRat_2M. You'll find me on Twitter, Instagram. Also, as Matt said earlier, we run a bunch of projects. So Hyperspace Hangouts, our Star Wars podcast. We've got Bend the Knee, our Game of Thrones podcast. Heroes of the Horn is our Wheel of Time podcast, which is popping right now. So I think if you're into this whole idea, this Witcher verse, I think you'd really like the Wheel of Time series. So head over there. Heroes of the Horn. We're having a good time over there. So
yeah, we also have another podcast called The Matt and Ez Show. You can go check it out.
Yeah,
because guess what, Ez? December 31st, Cobra Kai season 4.
Let's go.
It's just nonstop with all of the content that's coming out.
The Elder Wand. I forgot. Harry Potter is popping now too. So guys, it's the Matt and Ez Media Network. All right, you gotta check into it.
Yeah. It is what we do. So awesome. All right, Ez, as always, thanks for coming on. Remember, guys, you can follow me anywhere on the internet at Super Gains Bros. And as always, thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been the most beautiful audience. Remember to toss a coin if you can. If anyone needs me, I'll be at the bar. What for the earn is the point of no return. After everything we did, we saw... You turned your back on me, what for? To yearn. Watch that butcher burn. At the end of my days when I'm through, no word that I've written will ring quite as true as burn. Burn, burn, butcher, burn, 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 burn. Watch me burn all the memories of you.